Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Hello and welcome to episode 209. I'm back with Bex.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Yeah, still happy that isn't a smashing, crashing noise like it was before, so thank you for that.
Yes, you're welcome. So what have you been up to? It's only been a couple of weeks since you were last on, so.
Yes, well, nothing quite as exciting as the 5 weeks in Tokyo.
Yes.
That's kind of a hard act to follow. I've been doing a lot of fighting with technology.
Yes.
My aptly named VR Oculus Rift computer and streaming rig Skynet has been misbehaving herself again.
Right.
So that was quite cunning. There's nothing like deciding you're going to start Twitch streaming and turning on the machine to check if everything works and finding out that there's a passcode to get into the desktop when you didn't set one.
Ah, yes.
So that was nice.
Skynet deciding to block itself off from its owner. Yes.
Yes. So the singularity may occur any minute. Yeah, it was a big Windows update or something had somehow confused the system because it had been turned off for ages.
Right,
and
yes.
It just sort of went, enter your password. And I was like, I don't have one. I'll be reinstalling Windows then.
Right, yes.
Had to reinstall Windows and get everything working again so I could start with the Twitch streaming, which has been quite an interesting experiment.
Yes.
It's quite a lot of fun.
I caught your first stream. It was most entertaining.
Yeah, it's quite a lot of fun. And it's lovely to be able to have that direct interaction with the community and things. And because it's a little bit like podcasting, but they can see your face when you look confused because everything's broken, and they can directly ask you questions back. And that, yeah, I've watched some other people doing it before, but that was my first go at doing it myself. So yeah, that's been quite exciting and quite good fun. It's the third one just ended up divulging into a massive conversation about Arnie movies.
Right, okay, of course, why not?
Because I'd been to the charity shop, and the charity shop had these three DVDs for a quid.
Bargain. Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously I obtained a lot more DVDs, including a comic copy of Demolition Man, which I've been desperate to watch for months. I haven't seen Demolition Man in ages. It turned out that the disc was actually region one, so I still haven't seen Demolition Man again. I was like, no, standing outside in the rain, you know, it was all very dramatic. Copy of Transformers, the movie, picked up a copy of that.
Nice.
Yeah. And then we were just talking about loads of Arnie movies, and I realized how many good Arnie movies there are. How many good science fiction films he's been in.
It's
when you start listing them, you suddenly start saying, that's actually a lot of good films.
Yeah, he has been in a surprising number of decent films. Considering he also had a secondary career as governor of California for a while, he managed to pack quite a lot in before he did that.
Yeah, it was quite good to sort of have that trip down memory lane before I was theoretically going to watch Demolition Man, but then I wasn't because it was a Region 1 DVD, and I went, no. But yeah, it's quite good fun. And it's quite good to realise how many Arnie films I want to watch again. Running Man, haven't seen that in ages.
Yes. No, I haven't seen that in a very long time.
That's a good film. Total Recall.
Yes, that's a good film.
You need to watch that. That's a very good film. Yeah, the list just kept growing.
The original Arnie one, not the remake.
Yes. Well, the remake, I'm assuming, was kind of a second adaptation because it was far closer to the book, but just wasn't very good, unfortunately.
Yeah.
All these times you're like, I wish this film was more like the book. And then you're like, I preferred the film. Film that that wasn't anything like the book.
Yeah.
We will remember you it for you wholesale is the book.
Right. And, yes.
The Arnie movies, way less accurate, but way better.
It's more fun, I think, the Arnie one. The second one actually was all right. It was fine, but it didn't have all the kind of classic stuff that you had out of the Arnie one. The Arnie one had a lot of really kind of cool scenes and stuff, and
it was much just better cast and better acted. And it actually, the more I talked about it and the more I thought about it, the clever that film and the way they cast it actually is.
Yeah.
And it had loads of standout moments. It's highly quotable as a film.
Yes.
You know, if you go to anyone that's sort of like of our kind of age and say 2 weeks, it's up there with multi-pass, isn't it, as a thing.
Yes.
You can say. And I can't remember a single line from the second film.
No.
I can't remember which character's which because they all look the same.
Yeah,
no, it didn't have anything. It felt like it was a very safe movie with safe cast and lots of money being thrown at something without any real regard for the end product, which was a shame.
The first film was fairly iconic, and I think making a new version of it wasn't really worthwhile.
No, well, not unless they were going to do something good that was the plot from the book, because the first Arnie film was so different.
And, I mean,
it needed to be good. That's all it needed to be, was good.
Yeah.
And they missed, unfortunately, on that one.
Yes.
Some nice visual effects, and they had the tunnel going through the planet, which is in the book, which wasn't in the Arnie one, but
right,
yeah, things like that you haven't thought about in a while, and you sort of go, actually, no, that's amazing, and I wouldn't have gone down that long trail of thought for an hour and a half or whatever it was we were talking about Arnie movies for.
Yeah, and then of course you've got all the Terminator movies, particularly Terminator 2.
Yes, well, one of the best sequels ever made.
Yes,
I stand by that. One of my favourite sequels ever.
Yeah,
didn't feel like a cash in at all. Wonderfully evolved it.
They sort of dropped off a bit after that, but Terminator 2.
That's a polite way of putting it. Yeah.
Yes, which is why I'm quite interested for the new one, because the new one has Linda Hamilton back and is James Cameron again, and it's supposed to be the direct sequel. It's basically Terminator 3. So,
well, the TV show was good. I've forgotten the name of it. Sarah Connor Chronicles?
Yeah, the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
That was, it had the lady good. From Firefly as the Terminator.
Yeah, and wasn't Lena Headey, I think, was Sarah Connor in that version, I think.
Yeah, that had some really good moments. I didn't see the whole thing, but some of the bits I caught I thought were really nicely written and sort of took it off in some different directions. So that was interesting. So they can do more. It's a very interesting world.
Yeah.
More can be made from it, just not if they go in the direction they did with some of those later films.
Yes.
But yeah, so lots of that. So I've been watching old stuff again. That's basically what's been happening. I've been drawn back into watching much older films, sort of 80s and 90s films again, which is quite good. I watched Iron Sky again, which was a Kickstarter science fiction film.
Ah, cool.
Which is a alternate now where some Nazis are living on the dark side of the moon who don't know the war's over.
Of course. Well, why not?
And they aren't necessarily all the bad guys. There are good and bad on both sides, because they come down and they have to deal with then the modern world and what's going on here. And it's very funny. And all done on Kickstarter in the same kind of style as Kung Fury was, where it's all CGI, all green screened.
Right.
Interesting look. I think they're making a second one of it. And what else did I watch? I rewatched some old Marvel things. I went back and watched Thor and Thor 2 and Ragnarok again.
Yes, I saw some of Thor because it was on TV recently, and I caught some of it. It goes to show you how much Thor has evolved as a character throughout those films. When you would watch that first one again and look at where he ends up in Endgame, and probably the most evolved character out of all the Avengers, I would say.
Well, Loki's changed a lot as well. Not that I talk about Loki a lot, but you compare his character when they introduced him as kind of
a lovable
bad guy, and then you look at him in Ragnarok, where he is the voice of reason and he's very sensibly just trying to make friends with the person in charge of the planet so they can get off it later, and Thor's just like, that's my brother, and he's just like shush, you're ruining things.
Yes.
And he's being playing the sensible businessman.
Yes.
As well as quite a bit of comic relief at the beginning. I do like how they are willing to play with and change the characters and grow the characters, and it's good seeing that evolution.
Yeah, it is. They do such a good job with those. I'm I'm very much looking forward to seeing where they go next with the whole MCU, because we're in a bit of a MCU lull at the moment, but there are some more films coming. It's just they're taking a little bit of a break, which is understandable after Endgame.
Yeah, I think they definitely need, I think a lot of the fans probably need, as a lot of people were leaving the cinema pretending not to be crying after that one, so they need a bit of a rest as well. I haven't seen Spider-Man yet.
No, I haven't got to it yet either. I do want to watch it. I do really want to watch it, but I'm terrible for getting out to the cinema, so I will try and go and see that. I haven't seen Toy Story either, and that's the other thing that I could do with going and seeing, really.
Yeah, I've not seen that either. People are saying quite good things about it.
Yes, they've both got pretty solid reviews, so yes, those are the two things that I do need to go out and see, because I haven't been yet.
Awesome. I'm trying to think what else I've done. I've been doing some adventuring out in the outside world, which is always good in the sun.
Yes.
Remembering what the countryside looks like, trees, grass, those things you normally just see in the backgrounds on fantasy shows there.
Yes.
That kind of stuff. So that's been quite good. And I went out to the Joypad Bar retro gaming event the other week.
Cool.
In central London, which was nice. Lots of indie games and retro games and some more Mega Drive games written entirely and on actual Mega Drive cartridges, but new games.
Oh, wow.
By
more
indie
of
guys.
Them.
So,
yes.
Yeah, because obviously there was Tanglewood was there.
Yeah.
But he'd brought some friends of his who also write Mega Drive games.
Wow.
Including a nice scrolling shooter I've temporarily forgotten the name of that was pretty damn cool. So that was pretty cool to see.
That's awesome. I didn't realise there were more of them. I mean, the Tanglewood thing was kind of fairly unique, but I'm glad there are other people doing it. That's cool.
Yeah, and hopefully with the attention that Tanglewood got, then more of those people will get noticed and maybe we'll have some more games written for original hardware.
Yeah, that would be very cool.
What have you been up to?
Mainly, apart from a little bit of gardening, my garden looks less like a jungle, mainly TV watching. The three sort of shows I've been doing on rotation this week, apart from all the sort of regular things like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and all that sort of stuff. Jessica Jones, which of course started fairly recently, and I sort of didn't get a chance to jump onto it straight away. So I'm working through that at the moment. I'm on episode 10. Matt who was on last week saying it has the usual problem of it being three episodes too long, which is the same with all those Marvel series. And I kind of agree with him. I mean, it's not dragging particularly, but it's very good. I mean, I am enjoying it, but you do watch it with thinking you could have chopped a little bit out there and you could have chopped this down by a few episodes and it still would have worked absolutely fine. But that's been really good. I'm on episode 10 at the moment. I'm waiting to see how it ends and see whether they wrap it up reasonably well. Stranger Things, of course, started about halfway through that at the moment. I'm really loving this season. I think they've done a brilliant job. They're servicing the female characters a lot better than they have done in previous seasons this year. There's a lot more stuff for Elle, which is Millie Bobby Brown's character, and the other sister who, the younger character that joined last season, I think. They're servicing the younger female characters quite a lot better than they have done previously, which is great. And Years and Years is the other thing, which I finally got around to watching. I've been kind of building myself up to that because everybody tells me it's brilliant, but also kind of depressing as well. And it's a really odd mix. This is Russell T. Davies's latest drama that went out on the BBC a few weeks ago. It's essentially based around the idea of sort of using the current political landscape as a starting point and then kind of imagines what could happen moving forward from there. So there's bits of future tech in it. There are characters that are trying to become transhuman. So are talking about sort of uploading themselves to the cloud and replacing sort of body parts with cybernetics and stuff. So that's the sort of thing with the younger generation. There's a lot of stuff about the sort of politics and where sort of politically the world is heading and that sort of stuff. It's brilliantly written. It's actually quite funny in a lot of places. It's got that sort of Russell T. Davies humour to it. It's also unbelievably bleak in places as well. And it's this weird mix of that was quite funny, but this is quite depressing.
That sounds up my street, so I will have to start watching this one.
Yeah, it's really interesting. If you're worried about the future of the country or if you're worried about where the future is heading and how the world might turn out for the young younger generation, you might not want to watch this because it really does paint a very bleak picture of the future. But it's interesting. It's very interesting, very different. I've got a couple of episodes left to go in it. It's exactly what Russell T. Davies does so brilliantly well. I mean, he was great on Doctor Who, but if you look at some of his other work, particularly things like Second Coming, which was a thing about the second coming of Christ, which he did with Christopher Eccleston before he became Doctor Who, It's very much in that sort of vein of that kind of mini series of taking sort of real life and putting something slightly more fantastical in it. And he just does it so well. It's really interesting and thoroughly engaging. But like I say, be warned, it is a little bit depressing as well. So interesting series. I'm very much enjoying that.
Have you watched any of the more recent? Because there's another series of Black Mirror came out that I've not watched yet.
I've watched the first one, which was good. I enjoyed the first episode.
I hear hesitation.
Yeah, to the extent of I can't actually remember it particularly well, which is probably not a good sign. Yeah, I have watched the first episode of it, and it wasn't a particular standout one for me. I've got to do the second and third ones. I'm sort of trying to get through Stranger Things and Jessica Jones first before I jump into that, and I've got a whole list of things that I need to. There's things like Sneaky Pete on Amazon Prime I need to go and watch, and so there is a whole backlog of stuff which I need to catch up on. But yeah, you go on holiday for a couple of weeks, or you go away for a couple of weeks, and then things pile up. So yes, I have a backlog of things to get through. But yeah, those are the three that I've been doing so far. So that's all the stuff we've been up to. Let's move on to some TV and film news. TV and film news this week, starting off as always with the renewals, cancellations and pickups. First one is a cancellation. Ransom has been cancelled after 3 seasons. This was a sort of crime drama thing. It ran on Universal over here. It was one of those that is financed by like 4 different broadcasters in 4 different countries. And those are always a bit tricky to get renewals on. And it basically sounds like they've kind of, somebody must have dropped out somewhere because it's a financing issue. So they've decided they're not going to make any more of it. So that's finishing after 3 seasons. We've got Peaky Blinders, which is coming back soon. We don't have the exact date for it, but that's coming back soon on BBC One, which I'm very much looking forward to. But on the 18th of July at Birmingham Town Hall, there is going to be an exclusive world premiere. That's Thursday, the 18th of July. You can be in with a chance to win tickets for that. There's sort of a lottery thing going on. So if you go on to geektown.co.uk, there is a post on the website. You can find a link on there that will take you through to where you can win tickets for that, or be entered into the draw to the lottery draw to get tickets to go and see that if you want to give that a go and you're around Birmingham. I hopefully will be going along to that as well, so that should be very cool. Sky One has picked up the NBC drama Manifest. Finally, somebody has picked that up. Tuesday, the 30th of July, that's going to start airing. This is the one about the aeroplane which takes off, lands a couple of hours later, and it's only been like a few hours for the people on the plane, but it's been like 5 years for people on the ground when they land. Mm. So that's the sort of basic premise of it, and things move on from there. So it's sort of got a sci-fi supernaturally thing going on.
Yeah, so that's kind of like all these ones where you see where people return after having been lost, but from the point of view of
yes.
The people having been lost and them not seeing the difference in time, because normally these kind of setups are, it's been 20 years and they've come back and they've not aged.
Yes.
And this is the reversal of that premise, I guess.
Yeah, it's similar in that, you know, with a lot of those things where people have come back in time or they've come back from the dead, or, you know, so they don't exactly know what's going on. Whereas this is sort of the planes assumed lost at sea and then they return and they're going, well, what's the problem? You know, I was only gone a few hours. My flight's landed and suddenly it's 5 years later. So it looks really interesting. Stars Josh Dallas, who you will know from Once Upon a Time, played Prince Charming in that show. He's the one of the main leads, but it's sort of a big ensemble cast. So yeah, looking forward to finally seeing that because I hear reasonable things about that. And it's been renewed for a second season already. So that's one to look out for. 30th of July, that's airing on Sky One. It looks as though Chicago Med might be moving moving from Universal in the UK to Sky Witness. That's not officially confirmed by Sky, but that's what we're hearing. I don't actually watch personally any of the Chicago series, but it's always been a problem in the UK because Chicago PD airs on one of the Channel 5 channels, Chicago Med aired on Universal, and Chicago Fire aired on Sky Witness. So it was always a pain because those three shows have quite major crossovers and they never time them all to run at the same time.
Yeah, it's a shame they couldn't do some kind of package yes. deal to get them all in one place because people will want to watch more than one series.
Yeah, it could be a case of they don't allow Channel 5 or they rank up the price for Channel 5 to renew Chicago PD so they can't afford to buy the next season possibly and they manage to get all three in one place. This basically seems to be happening because Comcast now owns Sky, and what that means is Comcast are also owners of NBC, who run Chicago Med, Chicago Fire, the whole Chicago franchise in the US. They also own Universal, so it means that they now own Sky Witness and they own the Universal Channel, which allows them to be able to take it off the Universal Channel and move it onto Sky Witness. That seems to be what the case is, because Universal is effectively a Sky Channel now. So hopefully they'll get hold of PD as well, and what everybody has been wishing for, all the Chicago fans are wishing for, is that all three actually end up in one place, which would make sense given that they're their shows. It would make sense if they could run them all together, but we'll have to wait and see what happens with PD.
Yeah, because it would help their viewing figures to be able to watching their crossovers.
This is what I don't understand with Chicago, with Channel 5, is they always run it around the summer, whereas Sky Witness run Fire much earlier and Universal run Med around about the same time usually, so there's not usually too much of a problem between those two. But PD has always been a real pain because for some reason Channel 5 run it miles and miles away from the rest of them. I don't understand why they do that, because you get more viewing figures if you ran it close to when Sky Witness run, you know, the main show or the first show, which is Chicago Fire. So I've never really understood why they do that. It makes no sense, apart from the fact that it's Channel 5 scheduling, and as we've said many times before, I'm fairly sure they schedule while they're drunk. So we'll see what happens with PD. It could be that there is a deal coming for PD as well, but we don't know at the moment. And that isn't official news from Sky. Sky are refusing to comment, but that is sort of what we're hearing on the grapevine might be happening. So we will wait and see for an official announcement. But yes, looks like Chicago Med is moving to Sky Witness. Over on Channel 4, Travel Man, the Richard Ayoade series, is no longer going to be the Richard Ayoade series. He's decided that he's packing it in after 4 or 5 seasons, I think. And Joe Lycett is going to be taking over. Not a show I particularly watch, but I know there's a lot of people very upset because, like, Richard Ayoade is so unique that he's sort of the person that makes that series. And Joe Lycett is a perfectly reasonable comic, but yeah, it's not the same level of kind of strangeness that you get from Richard Ayoade.
I mean, whoever you replaced Richard Ayoade with, they would not be him.
Exactly.
He's a very distinctive and wonderful, quirky character, quite a Marmite presenter, I would think, for some people, but most people love him and will watch a show because he's in. I don't think I know Lycett. Is he on a lot of the comedy shows?
Yeah, he does a lot of those panel shows and stuff, and his stand-up's quite funny as well, and he's perfectly good, funny comedian. He's just not Richard Ayoade, and that's sort of a problem, particularly when that show is so tightly attached to Richard. I can see why people are upset about it, but it's happening. That's what they're doing. It may be that it all falls flat on its face and they don't renew it afterwards, but we'll have to wait and see. It was Richard's decision to not do it anymore. He's not like he's been fired or anything. He just decided he didn't want to do it anymore. So
yeah, well, it's presumably quite a demanding schedule.
I would imagine so, yes, because it's a lot of traveling and stuff, and if he wants to do other things, because he has directed in the past and because he acts as well, so if he wants to do other stuff, if you've got to block out a huge chunk of time to do those travel stuff, it's probably quite difficult to schedule. So I don't know what else he's doing, but I can see why he maybe wants to pack it in. And if you want to go and check out the Geektown website, there are a few trailers and images up there. You can go and look at Four Weddings and a Funeral limited series from Mindy Kaling. There is a trailer for that up there. That's a TV version of the classic movie, which is nothing to do really with the film other than it has Four Weddings and a Funeral in it as a TV series. It's a sort of limited series, so it may be one season, but they had talked originally about it being some sort of anthology, so the cast will change each season, and each season will have Four Weddings and a Funeral. So it's basically a romantic comedy series that happens to use the name more than anything else. It did look quite funny though, the trailer, so you know, worth a look. There are some first look images from Netflix The Witcher up on there as well, which looks pretty good, I thought. There's pictures of Henry Cavill as Geralt up on there, and a few of the other characters, so that's worth going to look at. And first images of Klaus Bang, who is the man starring as Dracula in the new Gatiss and Moffat version of Dracula, the people behind Sherlock, who are doing three episodes, well, they're sort of three movie length episodes, like 2 hour feature episodes of a new version of Dracula, which is coming probably later this year, maybe early next year.
Interesting. Do we know if that's based off older movies and older TVs, or if that's based off the book?
I think it's a mixture of everything. The images look great. It seems to be very much in the vein of the classic sort of Hammer horror kind of look of Dracula. It's very much more in, you know, it's not like they've messed it around and put it in modern day. It seems very much in the traditional sense of Dracula. So it could be really good, that. It's got a really great cast. And Gatiss is such a huge horror nerd that I think they will do a really good job with that. I can imagine they're going to want to do sort of proper kind of Hammer type justice to it, I suspect. So it looks really good, that. But there are images up on the website if you want to go and check those out. Moving on to some bigger news stories. Netflix officially has ordered a Neil Gaiman The Sandman series. Finally, somewhere it is actually getting on screen, having been stuck in development hell pretty much since it came out as a comic book, actually.
Pretty much. A difficult series to adapt.
Yes. And that's always been the problem, of course. I do know the comic book particularly well. I don't think I've ever actually read it.
I have most of the comic book in singles, and I have the graphic novels, and I've read the Death spin-off series. And in fact, I've read most of everything Neil Gaiman's ever written, books and comics. So for me, it's quite exciting news. But it's also a source material that's very, very close to my heart that I've been reading and involved with since it came out and started being published by Vertigo back in the day. So there's going to be quite a lot of weight of expectation on this. Yeah. And it is because it takes on, for those who might be new to the series, it takes on the embodiment of things like Dream, Delirium, Death, and so forth, those kind of characterizations you think of, but they're quite different than, you know, the Grim Reaper or the Sandman and things. They are very much his own takes on them, and they're very relatable, complicated characters, but also it's quite a visually unique book. The same as when we were talking about the Umbrella Academy getting adapted, and that had some very unique visuals. They kind of made it all more human and realistic for the Umbrella Academy, and I thought they did that well. Sandman, I think, is even harder to move away from the visuals element, because it is very dreamlike in places. So it could be amazing, and I think Netflix is the correct place to put something that's a little bit left field like this. I'd love to see this work on the screen.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. On a side note, of course, had you not decided to go to Japan, you could have come to the Good Omens premiere with me and met Neil Gaiman. But, you know, I'll just put that out there.
Just hang on. Let me just hand you some more salt to put in that wound. Yeah, I haven't seen Good Omens yet. I need to watch it. I think I'm partly just in sulk because of that.
You could have also met Terry Gilliam as well. I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah, because you hate me, yeah.
Well,
I would have done this really kind thing if you weren't halfway around the world. Oh, that's nice of you. Just keep mentioning that. It's fine.
You know, your decision to fly off to Tokyo, you know.
You see that it was planned.
Nobody forced you. Anyway, yes.
My credit card purchase. interested.
So yeah, I mean, the I'm very much looking forward to this because I do really like what he's been doing on screen recently, particularly with things like American Gods and Good Omens, which was absolutely brilliant. For those of you that don't know the Sandman comic books, as Bex kind of explained, it's a sort of dark fantasy. It's based around Morpheus, who is the Dream King, described as it follows him as he mends the cosmic and human mistakes he made during his vast existence, is how they're pushing it. But it includes these various other sort of characters, which are sort of godlike, I guess, or they're...
Yeah, they're like a dysfunctional family, but they're all the embodiment of different ideas.
Yeah.
And they all have their own characters, and they're all very interesting. Things like there is one called Delirium, who is loosely based on Tori Amos, the singer who's friends with Neil Gaiman, and has her kind of colourful hair and things. She has a backstory where she used to be Delight, and what changed in the world to cause the world to need Delirium instead of Delight.
Right, yeah.
There's a lot of kind of metaphorical existential stuff going on, but yes, told through these modern fairy tales following these relatable, almost godlike characters who are just as flawed. I guess sort of in the way, you know, the Greek and Roman gods were flawed, and the ancient Egyptian gods were flawed.
Yeah.
Those kind of things. And he does that kind of thing very well, as you've been watching the American Gods and things.
It's, yeah,
really interesting ideas.
I think that's going to be really quite interesting. It's described as ordering 10 episodes plus one. So 11 episodes?
that maths would indicate that's 11, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's described as 10 episodes plus one. So I'm wondering if maybe they're going to do 10 episodes plus a special of some description. Maybe they're going to release something at like a Christmas thing, or I don't know. So I'm not entirely sure why they've listed it that way, but
yeah, I mean, my brain would really like that to mean 10 episodes plus one that was focused on death.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it is that.
They did multiple limited miniseries based around the character of Death, who's a can't think why I liked her growing up, but she's a goth teenager.
No idea why I liked her at all.
No, didn't utterly get my fashion sense from her as a 15-year-old. And she's very sort of personable and nice and sort of matter of fact and is a very nice person to come and kind of pick you up. And yeah, they'd spun her off.
Right,
so
yeah.
Part of my brain says, oh, well, if they're doing a Sandman,
maybe they'll do that. I mean, that's the other interesting thing, of course, is that, was it where Constantine and Lucifer were introduced? Was it in that run?
Off the top of my head, I'm afraid I can't remember, because I read all of the Sandman things, then all of the Death comics, and then I sort of branched out and went around from there. I didn't necessarily read them in chronological order.
Right, okay. Certainly Constantine, who people will know from the version that's on Legends of Tomorrow, played by Matt Ryan, and the individual TV series played by Matt Ryan, and of course Lucifer, which is very, very, very loosely based on the Neil Gaiman thing, which is the TV show, which is also on Netflix. So I do wonder whether they might try and rope some of those people in, maybe.
It would be difficult because the other series is so tonally different, and they're set very much in now reality. Lucifer is very much set now, and it could be possible to do it as Easter eggs and little cameos, but I'm not sure they could tie it in fully without it having an adverse effect on the Sandman series.
That's sort of interesting, because the version of Constantine that's on Legends is very different to the version of Constantine that was in the Constantine TV show as well. So, I mean, he's had quite tonally a quite large shift. So I don't know. You could maybe get away with that, moving him across.
It'd be nice to see a little cameo of him sort of walking through the background or asking someone a question and spotting something and darting off into the distance. But I think they need to keep some things a little bit separate, because it gives you more freedom of creative control on each individual one.
Yeah. And of course, Lucifer, the TV series, is ending. So you could do things with that character if you want to take it down a sort of darker turn after the TV show has ended. You could maybe get away with doing that and just have Tom Ellis still play the character. I don't know, but
you might outrage fans of the Lucifer TV show, because
that is true. Yes,
it's awesome, but it is completely different.
Yeah, that is true. They certainly appeared in the comic books, and you know, we'll have to see whether they do pop up in the TV series.
There's a wide cast of people they need to establish just for the primary cast of Sandman on its own.
Yeah, it's going to be based around Preludes and Nocturnes, the first graphic novel. I'm assuming that was collection of the individuals. So yeah, it's going to be based around Preludes and Nocturnes for season one. Going to be exec produced by Neil Gaiman alongside David S. Goyer. David S. Goyer, very familiar to sort of DC properties, having worked on Nolan's Dark Knight trilogy. He worked on Constantine, the TV series. He worked on Krypton. He's all over the comic book adaptations. Gaiman's obviously Gaiman. Alan Heiberg, who's set as showrunner, he has worked on The Catch and shows like Scandal, Grey's Anatomy, The OC, Party of Five. He has written comic book stuff as well, because he also wrote Patty Jenkins' highly acclaimed Wonder Woman script, and has written Young Avengers. In fact, I think he came up with the Young Avengers for Marvel. He has got a comic book background as well, despite the fact that he seems to have moved on to those Shondalandy kind of shows. But he has got a comic book background. So, you know, he's going to be an interesting person to kind of develop it, I think. Gaiman's very much involved in co-writing as well. So it's not going to be...
And he's good at writing. I mean, you look at that one episode of Doctor Who he wrote, the TARDIS turned into a human being for an episode.
Yes.
It stood out somewhat as different from the rest of the episodes of the series, but it was pretty lovely. And that was considering that episode was supposed to be part of the series before.
Right, yes.
And it had to be completely rewritten because everything had changed in the meantime. And it was still a really interesting, fun piece of TV to watch. And it was one of my favourite episodes of that series. And not just because Neil Gaiman wrote it, but just because I found it. I loved the whimsy of it.
Yes. No, I really liked that episode. I thought it was fabulous.
He writes really relatable, very out there, unbelievable characters, but somehow seem exceptionally grounded and relatable at the same time. And that's an amazing skill. I've always admired it.
The pilot, I think, he's actually being co-written with Gaiman and Goyer, and then Alan Halberg is serving as showrunner. Gaiman said on Twitter, "I'm hoping we can make something on television that feels as personal and true as the best of the Sandman comics did, just set 30 years later than the Sandman comics." So yes, I mean, with Gaiman actually writing behind it, I think that would make sense. It's interesting it's ended up on Netflix as well, because Gaiman actually has an overall deal with Amazon Studios, not Netflix. However, The Sandman, of course, doesn't belong to Gaiman directly. It belongs to DC/Warner Brothers.
Yeah, because it was a Vertigo release.
Because it was a Vertigo release.
Yeah.
So I suspect that's why it's outside of the deal. And they decided to go to Netflix rather than go to Amazon. And if I was Netflix, you're going to pick up that series just to annoy Amazon, surely.
And you're going to pick it up because there is a huge fan base that has never seen an adaptation of that. And if you do it right, that's going to bring in a vast amount of people wanting a Netflix subscription just to see it.
I do think that Netflix is probably the right place for it. It does that sort of quirky off the wall thing a bit better. It's got there's a definite audience there for it, I think. So
they picked up Happy. I believe that they're willing to do things which I never thought would get adaptations. When they turn around and say they're going to do Transmetropolitan or something, I'll be amazed. But yeah, I didn't expect Happy to ever be on the screen, let alone in the form it was.
Yeah, I mean, Happy was a Netflix internationally sci-fi in the US, but they'd done things like Maniac as well. Umbrella Academy arguably was something which you looked at and thought, how on earth is they ever going to adapt this? So I mean, I think it is probably the right place for it, definitely. I'm very, very much looking forward to seeing this. There's no premiere date for it yet. Gaiman basically said they hadn't started writing it so far, so late 2020 is probably the earliest you're going to see it.
Yeah, we've waited 30 years. I think we can wait a little bit longer for it to be done.
You're going to want to make sure it's right first. Yes, definitely. Moving on to other news, over on Amazon, they're not short of large projects, because they have got Lord of the Rings coming, and they've finally announced their first director. It's going to be AJ Bayona, who is the director of Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, which was a good Jurassic World movie, actually. It was a good Jurassic sort of park Jurassic World movie. I think he did a good job with that. So he is signed on to helm the first two episodes, so he's kind of setting the tone and the scene seen of it. For those of you who don't know anything about the Lord of the Rings series, it is, of course, based on J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. It's set in the Second Age, which is a long, long time ago, before the Third Age, when the Fellowship went to Mordor and Bilbo met a dragon and all that stuff. The Second Age hasn't really been seen on screen at all. The only bit that we saw was the battle scene between the Last Alliance of Elves and Men and Sauron, which we saw at the start of the film trilogy, I think. We have seen little bits of it, but the Second Age is a huge period, spans over 3,000 years. It includes things like that battle that I just mentioned, the forging of the rings, the founding of Rivendell. So there are a lot of things that you can play with in that, I think. I'm glad they've finally found a director. I think he's an interesting person to take up the helm.
Well, if he's been working on Jurassic World films, then he knows how to do epic.
Yeah, he's also mates with Del Toro as well. His first feature film was the critically acclaimed thriller The Orphanage, which was executive produced by Del Toro. Also directed The Impossible, starring Naomi Watts and Ewan McGregor, A Monster's Call, starring Sigourney Weaver and Liam Neeson. And he directed the first two episodes of Penny Dreadful as well. But yeah, I'm quite excited for this. I think this could be a really interesting series. Because, I mean, I know it's going to upset a lot of Tolkien scholars. I'm absolutely adamant that's going to happen. But I think that's going to happen no matter what you end up doing. So, you know.
I'm definitely interested by it. I haven't read and sort of been involved in a lot of the media from the earlier bits of Tolkien history, but it's such a huge, expansive world. You're never going to run out of it. It's like the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
You can just keep writing. It's so big and there's so much there that you can just keep writing new epic things. I played some of the RPGs and hack and slash games that they've put together for Lord of the Rings, and they've all been really interesting plot lines. And there's so much you can fill in, not just about the characters we've already had, but the things they allude to, as you say, where they've shown flashbacks and when they're talking about the forging of the rings. Everything's epic. I don't know how anyone copes in Middle Earth, because they can't even walk to the shop to get a pint of milk without something epic happening. it's just one of those worlds, and being a quintessential fantasy book, I mean, the book that is now become, you know, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit is now what we think of as all the sort of stereotypical things almost of fantasy series, is because they became so quintessential of the genre because of his work. They definitely brought it all to the forefront, and it just appeals to so many people and is pretty timeless.
Absolutely. I'm very much looking forward to this. I think you are going to upset some people no matter what you do, as I'm sure some of the movies upset some Tolkien purists as well.
Lots of people shouting about how the trees were wrong.
Right, okay.
That was definitely a thing when they come out.
Aragorn didn't ever shout in the books, "Let's kill some orc," but you know, it's fine. I'm not that fussed. And there is a guideline for this. It's a bit like, you know, things like Star Trek as well. At this point, you know, there is like history sort of things set up. Tolkien wrote when events happen, and he wrote in more detail about some of this stuff as well. But as long as you're kind of not messing too much with the established history, and you're kind of filling in gaps, I think you're fine. It's all good. No news on when that's coming yet, and I don't think there's been any casting yet either. We'll have to wait for all that to arrive.
It's going
to
be an expensive series.
It is, and it's already been picked up for multiple seasons as well, because that was the only way they'd agree to it, is if Amazon bought multiple seasons. So, you know, you're getting multiple seasons of it whether you like it or not.
Well, hopefully we'll like it then.
Yes, so hopefully we'll like it, and hopefully it all goes well. But it is going to be very, very expensive to make. We'll bring you more as we hear about it. And lastly, we have Warner Media, who has ordered a bunch of shows recently for their new streaming service, have ordered one particular one which I thought might catch your eye. Gremlins. It's an animated Gremlins prequel they've ordered, called Secrets of the Mogwai. Animated television adaptation that travels back to the 1920s Shanghai to reveal the story of how a 10-year-old Sam Wing, future shop owner Mr. Wing, met the young Mogwai called Gizmo. Along with a teenage street thief named L, Sam and Gizmo take a perilous journey through the Chinese countryside, encountering sometimes baffling and colourful monsters and spirits from Chinese folklore. On their quest to return Gizmo to his family family and uncover a legendary treasure. They are pursued by a power-hungry industrialist and his growing army of evil gremlins. So, sounding very much like a child's cartoon sort of version of Gremlins, I think, from that description. But it's going to be 10 episodes of 30 minutes each and produced by Amblin Television in association with Warner Brothers Animation is the setup for that. So, Gremlins animated series?
Why not? I did always wonder how he got hold of Gizmo and why he then sold him as a pet.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see how they make that seem quite... Because it's one of those things you don't really question when you first watch Gremlins. It's just, of course, he's selling this strange creature that could destroy everything. How did he get it? Don't know. And I think that's quite a fun thought experiment.
Yes, that is going to be interesting to see how they get around the fact that he did sell him. Yeah.
Yeah. If they're supposed to be returning into his parents, then instead they flogged it on a shop some years later.
Yes.
Interesting plot twist there.
Yeah, so we'll have to see how they get around that. But yes, animated Gremlins, why not? I would have much preferred to see a sort of grittier live-action version of it, maybe. But, I'll take what I can get when it comes to Gremlins.
Yeah. I mean, you think at things that seem like strange things to make cartoons of in the past. And I remember quite enjoying the Highlander cartoon series.
Yeah.
And that
absolutely
was a strange thing to make a children's cartoon series out, and that
very much so.
We had a few back in the day. It's kind of an old tradition, make strange children's cartoon out of things children would never have seen the movie for.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Yes, there was an awful lot of those around in the 80s. So why not? Sure.
That's pretty much, it's like, there's nothing to really be offended about with this decision.
No.
It's just slightly baffling. It may be fun, or if it isn't, we just shan't notice it exists.
Yeah, so, I mean, who knows when we'll get it over here, because it is coming to the Warner Media streaming service, which hasn't yet got a name, although it may be called HBO Plus. That seems to be one name that's being touted around, because Warner Media own not only HBO, they own CW, falls under that banner, as CBS, Adult Swim, Cartoon Network, True TV, CNN, all the DC Entertainment stuff, New Line, TNT, TBS. There's a whole stack of things that they own. So they have got some interesting original content coming, though, for that streaming service. There's a Dune series, which is a spin-off from the movie, which is coming next year, with Denis Villeneuve directing the pilot of the TV series. So it is going to be a direct tie-in to that movie version. So I think they're hoping that movie version does quite well. Otherwise, that's going to really screw them up. So there's that coming, which is called Dune the Sisterhood. There is a Kaley Cuoco from Big Bang Theory. She is doing a dramatic role called The Flight Attendant, which is based on a best-selling novel, tells the story of a flight attendant who wakes up in a hotel room hungover from the night before in Dubai, only to discover she's lying next to a dead body, which I thought sounds quite interesting.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah. You can tell from life experience that Bex knows about that.
This isn't going to be at all be taken out of context later.
No, not at all.
In a court case.
They've got a half-hour rom-com called Love Life, which is an anthology rom-com series described as the journey from first love to last love and how people we meet along the way make us into who we are. That's starring Anna Kendrick in the first season of that. There is an adaptation of Made for Love, which is a novel. It's going to be directed by S.J. Clarkson, who is currently doing the Game of Thrones prequel and just a whole bunch of other things. It's a dark half-hour comedy about a 30-something woman who goes on the run to escape her suffocating marriage to a controlling and possibly psychopathic tech billionaire. Unfortunately for her, discovers that he can track her and knows her every thought and feeling due to the fact that he has a monitoring device implanted in her brain. It's written by Patrick Somerville, who wrote the wonderfully bonkers Maniac. In which case,
I'm immediately sold.
Yeah, so I think that sounds like it's going to be very weird and off the wall. Patrick Somerville's also writing Station 11, which is another novel adaptation. This is a post-apocalyptic drama which spans multiple timelines and tells the story of survivors after a devastating flu epidemic. So there's that coming as well. And they've got Tokyo Vice, which is based on the true memoirs of an undercover reporter that went undercover travel with the Tokyo Vice Police Squad to root out corruption. It chronicles his daily descent into the neon-soaked underbelly of Tokyo, where nothing and no one is truly what or who they seem. That one sounds like it could be kind of gritty and interesting, because that's a sort of drama based on a true life thing. They've lined up quite a good set of original things to go out on that streaming service, but I don't think the streaming service is going to ever launch over here. So hopefully the individual shows will get picked up by different broadcasters in the UK, but we'll have to wait and see. So that's all the news we have for this week. Next up, we have an interview.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The interview this week is with Maggie Phillips, who is a music supervisor. She will explain later on in the interview exactly what a music supervisor does, but she has worked on a series of really good shows. She's worked on Hulu's The Act, which you can get on Stars Play in the UK, Shrill, which is, I think, a Hulu series as well. She worked on Handmaid's Tale, Legion, Counterpart, which is a brilliant, brilliant show, a sci-fi show, which is also on Stars Play in the UK. She also worked on Umbrella Academy and Homecoming on Amazon. She's worked on a whole bunch of different films. There's a whole stack of things that we talk about in the interview. We go into some detail on Umbrella Academy particularly. The other thing she works on is Fargo as well, and with the fourth season, which is about to start. So she talks a little bit about Fargo season 4 as well. So here's the interview with Maggie. We will see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. It's lovely to have you come on. I'm a huge fan of a number of the shows that you work on. So I'm very much looking forward to having a bit of a chat. Before we get into any of the individual shows, you're listed as a music supervisor. Do you just want to sort of explain exactly what it is that your job entails?
Yeah, and I will start by saying it varies from project to project. But in general, it is helping to find, select, and source the songs that you hear in a TV show or film, and then to handle all the clearances, which
right.
is
okay.
the very unglamorous part of the job, but the bulk of the job.
Yeah.
And the not fun part of the job. And then on shows, you know, I think a common misconception with music supervisors is that we are in control of the soundtrack, like it's our creative vision, and it's not. You know, some people I work with definitely do give me more license to do what I want to do. And then other shows, it's really the creator/showrunner's vision. And I'm there just to provide options, you know, and ultimately I'm not the decider, you know?
Right.
So a lot of times in interviews, people ask me, why did you choose that song? And sometimes I want to say, I didn't want to choose that song, you know, like, so that's a hard part of the job. And it's hard to talk about in interviews.
Yes. No, because you don't want to get in trouble with people that are hopefully going to hire you again. So
exactly.
Yes. No, I very much get that. I can understand that. So how do you end up getting into a job like that?
It honestly just sort of fell in my lap. It was not something that I was pursuing. I had no goals to have a career in the film and TV industry at all. I went to school for art. I was a painter for the first decade out of college. And that's my true love, but, it's hard to make money doing that.
Yes.
I tried for a good 10 years and then moved to LA actually, cause I had family there to just stay with, trying to make the story short, to stay with family. They had a garage that I could use as my studio, and it was just a money saving option. And I thought I was only going to be there for a year and then would maybe go back to Austin. But what happened is my friends, Mark and Jay Duplass, are filmmakers.
And yes. Okay.
And we were friends. We met at the very end of my college years. We both went to University of Texas at Austin. The three of us. And so we got to be friendly after I graduated, but we were friends the whole, when in our 20s, we all lived together in New York City. And I was, and Mark was a musician, and I was one of their friends. You know, I was the friend that was always making mixes and like handing out CDs and introducing people to new music. It was just, it's always been a passion of mine. I mean, it's always been a, I've always been a huge fan, you know?
Yeah.
Just for my own personal reasons. And then when Mark and Jay started making movies, they started asking for my help. And it just sort of grew out of there, you know? It was, and it, you know, this was like almost 15 years ago at this point. And I had no clue what I was getting myself into, you know, like a lot of people do. They think, oh, I get to pick out songs for TV shows, or I get to, like, you know, everyone tells me it's a dream job.
Yeah.
Oh, that must be so cool. You get to pick. And and there is some parts of it that are really amazing and fun. But yeah, the whole business side of things, I had no clue what I was getting myself into. I ended up being good at it. So here I am.
So yeah, what you're saying is be friends with filmmakers and be the person that makes the mixtapes.
Well, I hesitate to say that because that is not all that it's.
No, that you need. Obviously. But
that's how it started for me. Yes. I think it's happening differently for people now because it's such a, with the change in what's happening with TV and how much content there is out there, it's such a coveted position. People really do have a misconception of what the role is, I think.
Yeah.
And so people go into this, so many people want it. There's classes for it now. There's much more information. Like when I first started, there was a few books that I used as references. And I think now it's a little easier to get information on the business end of things.
Yeah. Like you say, the business side of things, it all seems lovely and fluffy. The kind of idea of being able to pick songs for shows. And then there's the whole sort of clearance and getting all that side of things and all the business.
Yeah. And just the nitty gritty of it. Like you're not just picking the last song at the end of the episode. You're dealing with all the on-camera performances and all the background library source. And, you know, and I tell people, because I have people that want to work with me, and I tell them that you might end up hating it. Like, don't, you know, I just need, and I've had some people that come and work with me and they're like, you know what, this isn't what I thought it was, and I'm moving on. And I've been like, Godspeed, go forth. I understand.
Yes. You don't want to be stuck in something you don't want to be doing. So, So in terms of some of the TV shows, I mean, there's some great things that you've been involved with. I think the big one that I would pull out most recently is Umbrella Academy, which is a phenomenal series. And I've thoroughly, I was a fan of the comic books, but I mean, I love the series.
So much fun, right? Just a lot of fun.
Yeah, amazing amount of fun. I mean, there is one very distinctive use of music in that, which is the I Think We're Alone Now section. Mm-hmm. Where did that come from? Was that a direction choice?
That was Steve Blackman, creator, showrunner. And he called me early on. He and I met when I was at doing Fargo. He was one of the producers writers on Fargo. And so he and I started talking a lot about the music very, very early on. Like he pulled us on before both me and Jeff Russo, the composer.
Yes,
he pulled us on even before he started writing scripts and stuff, which is really early to come on board. But it was fun because we got to like just play around a lot with music in the beginning. And I Think We're Alone Now was his, I think it might have been the first song he asked me about. And he's like, he asked me what my thoughts were about it. And I was very enthusiastic because that song for me is the whole goal of the show. The music was to put in stuff that was fun and very nostalgic and playful, you know, and not too heady, not too obscure, you know, sort of just giving people what they want. And so for that song, I have a very strong memory attached to it when I was 13, when the song came out. So I'm aging myself, but I made up a dance routine with my two cousins. And I remember parts of the routine. We practiced it for like a whole day straight. And so as soon as they said that song, I was like, oh my God, that it has to be that. And I think since both really fell in love with that use, it's everything sort of, it was like a domino effect. Like once, and then Netflix really liked that use and the way Steve had shot it, or, you know, how it almost started feeling like a music video. And Netflix really liked that part about it and encouraged us to do more songs, or, you know, to find more placements like that.
Yeah.
And so that was sort of the instigating song.
Yeah, I can see that. And it turns into a great sequence. And we interviewed some interviewed some of the actors a while back for it, and I know they loved doing that sequence as well. So,
well, I think it was fun for them because it's the first episode, and they're still kind of feeling their characters out, and then they get to interpret how their characters would dance to a song, and I think that's probably fun to be physical with something like that. And it was so much fun for me to see how they sort of approached that when I got to see the scene.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned Jeff Russo there, who we've interviewed numerous times before. He's a lovely guy. You worked with Jeff, actually, looking at the two IMDb pages. Yeah, quite a lot, because you both did Altered Carbon, which is another great show. You both did Legion, The Act.
Fargo, Counterpart, yes, Umbrella Academy. We do a lot of shows together, and it's because simply, like, we love working with each other. He thinks I'm the best, and I think he's the best. and sometimes, I think whenever we go into an interview where, like, you have to work with this person, we're always pitching ourselves for the job, and sometimes we position each other as a team, like, ourselves as a team.
Yeah.
He's one of my best friends. He's one of my closest friends. Oh. So, and the friendship grew out of working together on Fargo.
Yeah.
You know, at this point, we've just developed a shorthand, and it makes for a more seamless process too. Creative aside, just like the workflow.
Yeah. In terms of some of the other shows, Legion is one which, I mean, I'm trying to think of, it's been a while since I've seen the last season and we're coming up to the new one. So I'm trying to remember exactly what music was used in there, because there must have been some pop music references used in that show.
Yeah, we did a lot in the first season. We used a lot of, you know, what you call the British Invasion. We had The Who and The Kinks. God, it's been so long that I'd have to go back and look at the list. And then, oh God, and of course, the Pink Floyd. Floyd was the first reference Noah gave both me and Jeff. He took us out to dinner and told us about what Legion was going to be about, and
That must have been an interesting conversation.
Well, he's so funny. He talks about, you know, he's talking about the characters and the story, and, you know, it sounds thrilling and we're having such a fun dinner. And then we left, and then Noah waits. And this is very classic Noah. Noah waits until the end of the evening, and he looks at both me and Jeff, and he's like, Dark Side of the Moon. And then he gets in his car, you know, and so Jeff and I were like, I went home and I listened to the album from start to finish for the first time in many, many years.
Yeah.
Email Noah in the morning. Jeff went back, and I think he, that night, might have purchased the same synth that they used for that album.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know if it was that night or the next day, but he immediately went and got that synth. But so that Jeff really ran with that, with that reference in the score. And then we actually got to do the direct reference at the end of the season. We licensed Breathe and On the Run.
Right. It's a great show. It's bonkers and horribly confusing in places, but it's just, it's fabulous, fabulous. I love having things like that out there that, I mean, I know it's coming to an end, but I mean, what a wonderful little thing to exist.
It's not for everyone. I mean, it's a challenging show, and and it's very visual, and it's, like you said, it's confusing, and you have to really be present for it. But I don't think there's anything else like that on TV.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And it was such a joy to work on that. I'm sad it's ending, but I know I get to keep working with Noah on other stuff, so I will continue to be challenged by him.
Yes, yeah, totally. Another thing you worked on was Counterpart, which I loved. I know that's been... came to an end, but I adored that show. I interviewed quite a lot of the cast for that. It's such a wonderful series. And in terms of coming to the music for that, you've obviously got these kind of two sides in the show. Was there some challenge involved in selecting music that appeared on either side of the divide?
Yes. I mean, we had to, we thought about it a lot, especially in the first season. And, you know, it's hard to come up with what would be on the other side.
Yeah.
I think the year was in the 90s. I might be saying 94 because that was my high school graduation, but I think it was right around there that the divide supposedly happened.
Yes.
And so we tried to keep that limit there, but then also there was bleed over between the two worlds. So there were times that we did have some like contraband music playing, I think it's season two. And then also, I mean, just to be totally frank, that show had a very tiny budget. So it was primarily Jeff on that show. Like it was a very score driven show. And so when we did get to use songs, it was more about J.K. Simmons' character.
Right.
And sort of like, who is this person? And we used a lot of soul, especially for Howard and not Prime. But just sort of, he was such a tragic character. And I felt like, I don't know, whenever I sat with him in music, I wanted to feel that tragic rawness and vulnerability. Like, anyway, so the soul, like we started actually, what was written into the first script? It was not James Carr, it was something else. And then I pitched James Carr for the end, and Justin really loved it. So we went with that. And I loved working on that show. God, and Justin was such a delight to work with. Like, he really trusted me with music, and it was fun. I wish it hadn't ended.
Yeah. It's one of those shows that really, I think, could have continued for a while. It's such a shame that they didn't keep it going. So in terms of some of the other shows you worked on, what was your favorite thing to work on musically?
Well, picking favorites is hard to do.
I know. Maybe I shouldn't ask you your favorite. Or one that springs to mind, maybe.
I have to say, and I don't think anyone else I work with would be surprised, but working on Fargo with Noah Hawley is the highlight. And we're starting season 4 now, and I am having so much fun listening for it. And I think I can be frank and say I like to work on shows where I get to have a little more creative involvement. And you never know what show's going to be like that. The act was a pleasure to work on. And Nick and I worked very closely together, and it was so much fun to listen for that show. I like it when I get to really listen instead of doing the nuts and bolts. So those are the shows that are fun for me. Shrill was another one. I can't wait for season 2 of Shrill to start up with the Hulu show starring A.D. Bryant. I loved working with those ladies, and they really trusted me with the music, and it was so much fun. So yeah, the running theme are the shows that I get to be more creative on are my favorite shows. But I love them all.
Yeah, I mean, The Act, which I haven't managed to catch yet, but it's going out in the UK on Stars Play over here, which is a kind of Amazon channel. That looks kind of interesting, doing something which is true crime related.
Yeah, and which is actually my favorite genre. Like, I love true crime. It was fun. It's a good show. It's a very solid show. And the performances are really phenomenal by Patricia Arquette and Joey King. And then what's the guy's name? Callum Worthy, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh my God, he's brilliant. They all are. I mean, yeah, I had fun. Like, that was the type of show that I would get a new episode in my email to me, and I would stop everything so I could see what happened. I try some shows like that, not to read the scripts, so I get the pleasure of watching a show, you know?
Yeah.
But we didn't use a ton of source, but the songs we did choose, we were very thoughtful about, and just tried to play up mostly Joey King's character, Gypsy Rose Blanchard, such a complex character, and the sort of balance of the naivete and innocence, like forced innocence and forced, because the story is that she's really 21, 22. Her mother's been telling her she's 14. Like, she never was allowed to grow up. And slowly over the course of the show, she starts learning the truth. And that's, I'm not giving you a spoiler because, And so as she starts discovering what's going on and really throws her into a dark sort of spiral, the music goes darker. And it was fun to play with those two. Like, there was her romantic kid side and, you know, fantasy world. And then there was also her femme fatale side.
Right. Yeah.
Which was also loaded too, because is she really a femme fatale? I mean, not at all. So, you know, we just played around with it. It was a complicated character to work with.
That looks like it's going to be a really interesting series. And I love true crime as well. So it's one I'm definitely going to go and catch up with.
Yeah, watch it. Yeah, it's a fun, it's also a fast, like, you just want to keep going. So it's a quick watch.
So in terms of other things, what have you got, anything coming up you can talk about?
Well, like I mentioned before, the one I'm really excited about is Fargo season 4, which is starting to be cast.
Right.
I don't know if they've announced some of they've only announced Chris Rock, I think, at this point.
Yes, I think so.
But the other casting choices are equally as inspired. And they have announced that it's going to take place in the 40s, 50s.
Yes.
Yeah, I know the exact year, but I guess they like keeping things under wraps. So So I'm excited to know, and I have a plan of how we're going to approach that in our contemporary world, how we're going to approach a period piece. We might not be as true to period as we were with Fargo season 2, which was set in 79. Right. So we're just exploring a bunch of options right now. And that's just fun when I get to do all that research. I'm working on a few Hulu shows, Reprisal, which with the Warren Littlefield's company, which is sort of a dark, twisted, genre smashing revenge thriller with a female lead. It's going to be very cool. That will come out next year with great music. I love the main guy, Josh Corbin, has fantastic music. And then also, I should mention, I'm starting Umbrella Academy season 2. That started.
Fabulous.
Yeah. And then also a new show called The Great, which is written and produced by Tony McNamara, who is responsible for The Favorite. Elle Fanning and Nicholas Holt. And
oh, wow.
We're in the beginning stages of that. It's so good. I'm so excited to be on this one. But there's not going to be a lot of scores. I think it's going to be primarily score, but it's still beginning stages. I'm excited for people to see that. I've got a lot of cool projects coming up for me.
Well, as I say, I'm looking forward to seeing particularly The Act, because that's one that I haven't caught yet. But those other shows sound good as well. Last couple of questions. First one is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
You know, I just finished season 2 of Barry, and I think it's right. I mean, everyone's talking about it, as they should be. I think it's such a great show. It's so well written, and my friend Liza does the music for that show, and I think the source cues are really smart, and I like their restraint. I like that there's not, I actually emailed her about this morning. I like that it's not littered with songs, and it's done very efficiently, and the choices are very purposeful. I think it's really well done. And then David Wingo's score is great too. But yeah, just a fun show to watch. And Bill Hader is so good.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I have a massive crush on him just because of his talent. And then I'm watching Chernobyl, which I would say wrong.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, really that's enjoying that.
Fabulous, yeah.
Yeah, that's it right now as far as what I'm into. I watch a significant amount of cooking shows.
Yeah, well, I guess you find that with a lot of people working TV, you either find that it's like they've spent their entire day looking at a screen, so they don't watch any TV for pleasure, or the stuff that they do watch tends to be like cooking shows and that sort of stuff. So
yeah, no matter what I watch, I'm thinking about this, how it's made, I'm thinking about the score, I'm thinking about the song choices, I'm looking up an IMDb who did it, yeah. You know, so I'm still in my work mode. When I Chopped is my all-time favorite show. I love Chopped so much. And when I'm watching Chopped, I'm just, you know, I work so much. I work so many hours. So to have a little escape is nice.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, it can be from past, present, or something future, not one you've worked on, which show would it be?
Oh my God. I'm trying to think, like, as a fan, I would have loved to have worked on Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, great choice. Yeah.
Yeah. As far as what would challenge me in the future, I'd love to work on a show that's almost silent. I feel like there's so much, we have so much music out there, so much content. There's so many shows with tons of great music. I'd rather work on a show that has one song in the whole season, but it's the perfect song.
Right.
Know?
Yeah, yeah.
I think a challenge sometimes is, like I said with Barry, is the restraint. And I think that would be something I would welcome.
Yes, that's good. Good answers, definitely.
Thanks.
All right. Well, I shall let you get back to your day.
Back to work. It's nice talking to you. I really appreciated all the questions and stuff. This was a good interview. Thank you.
No problem at all. I really like talking to you too. You'll have to come back on when the next Fargo's out or something.
Please. Yeah. I want to talk about it. I just can't yet. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Maybe get you and Jeff on together. That would be fun.
That would be fun. Yeah, we've done that a few times before. It's fun.
I'm sure we'd do a Jeff interview at some point. So maybe when the next Fargo season comes out.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do that. Great. Awesome.
Well, have a good night over there.
Yes, and have a good day.
Thank you.
All right.
I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. So that was the interview with Maggie Phillips. Hope you enjoyed that. The actors we mentioned you can find on Stars Play. The Handmaid's Tale is, of course, on Channel 4 in the UK. Umbrella Academy is, of course, on Netflix. So go and check those out. Now we have some highlights for next week on TV. So highlights for next week on TV. We have LA's Finest, which is a female-led spin-off from the Bad Boys movie franchise starring Jessica Alba and Gabrielle Union. Are you a fan of the Bad Boys films?
They're okay. They're quite fun. I am a fan of Jessica Alba, though, and I haven't seen her in many things recently at all. So true. I think it's nice for her to get a lead on something new. So I think that's probably what would draw me in the most.
Yeah. I think it's been renewed for a second season as well. So LA's Finest coming to Fox UK on the 10th of July at 9 p.m. for that. Outlander, the third season of that. So that's not the latest season. That's the third season for those of you watching on More4. That's coming 10th of July at 9 p.m. as well. Love Outlander. It's a great series. So worth watching. Departure, season one of that coming to Universal TV, which is a conspiracy thriller. Stars Dougray Scott is one of the cast in that. That's 10th of July as well. Not got a time for that. Not sure when that's arriving. Harlots, season three of that, which I know has bounced around a couple of different channels in the UK. It's now settled on Stars Play. Third season of Harlots is coming on the 11th of July. Agatha Raisin, season two of that, which was a sort of comedy amateur sleuth series, was dropped by Sky, but then was picked up by a US TV company called Acorn TV that sort of specializes in importing British comedy and drama and stuff. And they picked it up as an original series and made a second season, and then Sky bought it back again off them. So season two of Agatha Raisin coming to Sky One on the 12th of July at 9 p.m. Then we've got You, Me, Her, season four of that is coming to Netflix on the 12th of July. Poldark, the fifth season of that, coming on the 14th of July to BBC One at 9 p.m. People waving goodbye to a shirtless Aidan Turner. You've got People of Earth, second and final season of that, because it was cancelled after two seasons. It's a comedy about a support group for alien abductees. That's coming to Fox on the 15th of July at 10 p.m. Season two of The Outpost, which is a fantasy adventure series about a female hero with superpowers defending her world against fanatical religious dictatorship. Sci-Fi UK for The Outpost, 15th of July at 9 p.m. Harrow season two comes to Alibi on the 16th of July at 9 p.m. That's a good medical series. I think he's a coroner in that, if I remember correctly, but that's definitely worth watching. And lastly, Elementary returns for its seventh and final season to Sky Witness on the 16th of July at 9 p.m. And I'm really interested to see what they do with that, because mild spoilers for the end of season six, if you've not seen it, they end up in London at the end of season six, and it seems they're still there at the start of season seven. So that could morph into a bit more of a traditional London-based Sherlock thing, which, I mean, set in modern day, obviously, but that sounds like it could be quite interesting. I'm really looking forward to seeing how they end that. Sky Witness, 16th of July at 9 p.m. for that. And that's everything, unless you've got anything else you want to mention?
No, I think we've covered plenty. I do need to catch up on Elementary. I'm really excited to see how it finished, because I love that series.
It is really good. It's a really fun show. So, where can they go and find your various broadcasting things?
Various broadcasting things. That's an awesome way of saying geeky stuff. I can be found as Trista Bytes, spelt B-Y-T-E-S, because I thought I'd make a geeky pun and then realised it was really difficult to explain that on podcasts and I should have gone with something that was more phonetic. But I can be found on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and Twitch now as well. And I also put up some articles and videos on the geektown.co.uk website.
Go and check out her Twitch streams. They are very funny and you can insult her at the same time, which is great because you can do
that's
live.
That's a big selling point. Yeah. I'm finding that, yeah.
So for us, obviously, geektown.co.uk throughout the week for all the latest air date info. Want to get in touch with your questions and comments? Email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram @geektownuk. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.